welcome to Comic Talk Today for Saturday, June 23rd, 2018. This is the first ever episode of Top 5. I'm excited to be doing these. I know people sometimes hate reading lists, sometimes they love reading lists. It seems like maybe they love them more because everyone does lists all the time. I want to get in on the action. No, I'm just kidding. I do like lists, though, and I wanted to do some of my own in a segment that I'll be calling Top 5. How creative of me. For this very first Top 5, I'm going to be doing the Top 5 Comic Book Universes I Wish Would Return to Comics. Man, that's a long title. But there's quite a few that I wish would return. In fact, I almost thought about doing a Top 5 I Wish Did Not Come Back to Comics, but I'm not going to be doing that. In fact, I'll be talking about, maybe I'll talk about some of those at the end of this episode. But of course, if I want to talk about top five comic universes I would like to see return, the first one on the list, I'm pretty sure most of you can guess, is going to be the Dakotaverse, which is the Milestone universe. And of course, Milestone was a publisher that came out in 93 to great acclaim. It was being published and distributed by DC Comics, and that was created by Dwayne McDuffie, Dennis Cowan, Michael Davis, and Derek Dingle. And there were a ton of great books in that series, or in that publisher. There was Hardware, Blood Syndicate, Icon, Static. I think Static is probably the most well-known because he received an animated series, Shadow Cabinet, Zombie, Cobalt, and then Heroes. And of course, there were a couple miniseries, a couple events comics. In fact, if I remember correctly, Shadow Cabinet and Zombie came out of Shadow War. So that was a pretty good one too. I remember picking up some of these books when I was growing up, and the ones that I would see most often would be Hardware and Static. So my assumption is those were maybe the most popular. I think Blood Syndicate was pretty high up there as well. And, you know, when these guys were doing their comics, I was, let's see, 93, I would have been 12. So I was still getting, this is right before I found my first comic shop. So I was still getting comics at the little Korean deli that I talked about a couple episodes ago. And I remember seeing the cover to Hardware number one, and I was just blown away. And I don't even know what it was about it, because it's not even that an iconic a cover, but it was just beautiful to look at. And the stories were amazing. They were maybe, in many respects, a little over my head. And it's actually kind of weird that I was kind of drawn more to Hardware and Blood Syndicate, and while Zombie was great too, than some of the other ones. Because I think I should have maybe gone more towards Static because he was a younger hero. But I wasn't really interested in that. I was kind of more interested in the heavy hitters of the Milestone universe. So that's why I liked, in particular, Hardware the most. Milestone's been a really interesting thing to look at over the years, because I think they published through like 96 or 97. I can't remember the exact date. And then after that, they were absorbed into the DC universe. And things got really interesting when that happened, because if I remember right, that was at the time or around the time where Superman had disappeared. Icon was brought into the Justice League, so he was a Superman figure, and that was cool because there were no characters of color in the Justice League at the time. I mean, unless you count Green, right? But anyways, there were no characters of color, so it was cool to see. And to be honest, I think in that era, Icon was probably a better Superman than Superman was, and that's interesting to say. Of course, some of you know that I'm not a huge Superman fan. Well, except maybe like after Superman Rebirth. But I've never been a huge Superman fan. I thought that character in Justice League was fantastic. Static was in the Young Justice team as well. And I think that worked really well there because it served, you know, a pretty interesting dynamic that they've tried to use some other characters to fill in over the years. Like Kid Flash, for example. I think they've tried to turn Kid Flash a little bit into Static over the years. And I don't think it worked quite as well as Static. Of course, all that stuff went away because, like all stories, you know, comics are pretty recursive, so they change every few years. And those characters were kind of taken out of the DC universe. The publisher was kind of gone away, and DC just kept doing the stuff that they were normally doing. Until, oh god, I think the first time they announced they were going to bring it back was like 2010, 2011. They said they were going to bring Milestone back. That didn't quite work out for various reasons. You can probably go find that Kirkman show on TV that did an episode on it. Really interesting history on the Milestone universe. And, you know, even as recently as last year, DC has said everything's in place. They actually showed some cover images and teaser images for the upcoming relaunch of Milestone. that's still not here. I mean, we're already in middle of June, and they said these books would be coming out in 2018. I mean, solicited books are out until September right now, so unless these things are going to be released towards the end of the year, I'm pretty sure we're not going to see another Milestone book coming out this year. But I wanted to put it on the list because I think Milestone was so influential for a lot of us readers growing up in the 90s, because it really told very interesting stories at a time where Marvel and DC were floundering pretty heavily. And, you know, they were still putting out great books, but I would say the majority of the line was not as consistent as some of the better titles. And really, the interesting stuff at the time, I would say, was coming out from more indie publishers. By this point, I think Image was kind of, I don't want to say dying, but things were changing quite a bit with Image around this time as well. And, you know, it was really nice to see Milestone come in and do some fresh takes on superheroes. Obviously, the diversity card was in here, so that was really interesting to a lot of people who were never represented in comics before this. And, of course, now we do have a lot of representation across different ethnicities and races and gender identities. So really all that started off with Milestone. And so I think it deserves to be on this list. And I really hope that DC does go through with putting out these four Milestone books that they had announced. I didn't look up which ones they were, but the images look fantastic. I'm sure you can look them up. I'll put a link in the show notes, as a matter of fact, to that article. And I'm sure I'll tweet about some of the images that were shown. But Milestone is going to kick off the list, and that is with the Dakotaverse. And of course, since we're talking about 90s comics, there is no more 90s. Well, actually, there is more 90s than this one. But, you know, for a brand new publisher, there's no more 90s than the Ultraverse. So that has to make the list, because, oh my god, I love the hell out of some Ultraverse books back in the day. My favorite title that came out of the Ultraverse was Prime, and I think the majority of that reason was that Prime was co-created by Noam Breyfogle, who is one of my all-time favorite Batman artists. In fact, he is part of the reason why I ended up reading some Bloodshot over at Valiant. You know, the first Valiant title I found was Exo Manowar, and I wanted to try some of the other ones, but I wasn't sure, and then I saw Bloodshot was done by Breyfogle at one point, and I was like, well, you know what, let me check this out. And God, was it beautiful. Ultraverse had quite a few different books. They had The Exiles, Elven, Freaks, Firearm, Hardcase. Nightman was huge. Nightman had a TV show, a live-action TV show. I think at the time it was on UPN, which I think is what has now turned into the CW. And the interesting thing was, it was always kind of a diversity play with that network, because when UPN first launched, it was more geared towards, I would say minorities. There was a lot of people of color in those TV shows, right? I think like In Living Color was on there. Oh god, I wish I remember some of these shows. There's people listening, they're like, oh my god, yes, this show and that show and that show. Well, let me know, because I can't remember the shows. But Nightman was on UPN. And, I think that ended up turning into WB. Yeah, that's what it was. UPN went to W, it was WB, then it went to UPN, then it went back to WB, and then it went to CW. Nightman was actually really interesting. It was it was almost like a Batman analog, but he was a musician, so it's a really interesting play there. He was a jazz musician, so there was a lot of jazz in the TV show. And of course, that was a key part of the comic as well. I think the TV show only lasted a season or two. The comic went a little bit longer. And really interesting concept, though. Prime was still the best. Prototype was there. Oh, God, what else? The Strangers. Oh, Ultraverse, of course. And Ultraverse actually was a... I don't even know if they finished the full season, but there was a cartoon of Ultraverse at the height of the Ultraverse. And I'm trying to think what was that at the time. That was right after we had gotten the X-Men animated series. So there was a very short-lived Wildcats TV show, and there was a very short-lived Ultraforce TV show as well. And I think those are not available anywhere, but you can find them on YouTube. I don't think anybody cares that they're on there, so it's probably okay for you to go watch them. But yeah, the Ultraverse was interesting. There was, you know, all the characters were called Ultras, right? Instead of Metas like we have in DC or Mutants like we have at Marvel, they had the Ultras, and there was an event that happened in this cable car, and that kind of set off a chain of events that gave people superpowers. And I remember watching the recent Flash season on CW, and it reminded me so much of like those Ultra, the early Ultraverse comics, because what was it, the Thinker in this current season that just finished. He was looking for metas that had gotten their abilities in this cable car. And I was like, oh my God, like this is the Ultra Force. Why is there not an Ultra Force TV show? The problem is the Ultraverse is mired in controversy. Marvel ended up buying him out. I wish I remember what year it was. I want to say it was late 90s. I could be wrong on that. But Marvel ended up buying out the Ultraverse. Part of the reason that was given was the Ultraverse had one of the most beautiful art teams in the world. And part of the reason for that was Ultraverse, well, really Malibu, but with the Ultraverse, was one of the first comic book universes, one of the first comic book companies to do digital coloring instead of still using ink like they were still doing back in the 90s. And so a lot of people were so thoroughly impressed with the look of the book as a result. And Marvel wanted a piece of that because I guess they couldn't figure out how are these guys doing this type of coloring. And of course they bought the entire company and ended up relaunching it. Part of the reason I think too is DC was very interested in buying Malibu at the time. Malibu was doing a lot of interesting stuff. In fact, Image Comics kind of indirectly comes out of Malibu, because when that company first launched, Malibu was actually publishing the books and not Image, because they didn't know what they were doing. They didn't have the infrastructure. And so Malibu was very instrumental for a lot of these guys. I think the Turtles were being put out by Malibu at the time as well. A lot of interesting history with that company. And so DC was really floundering. I mean, both companies were, but DC was still kind of on top at this time. And if DC had purchased Malibu, they would have had a huge segment of the comic book market, and Marvel didn't want that. So they went ahead and bought the rights to the Ultraverse. The problem is when that happened, they canceled the entire line. They launched this new event, to come out of it. I wish I remember what it was, but it had, what were the titles on there? There was, The Avengers Ultra Force. There's Avengers Ultra Force and Ultra Force Avengers, that tied into the Ultra Force stuff. The Black Knight was kind of in both universes. The, Juggernaut showed up in this, Ultraverse reboot. Prime was showing up in Spider-Man. In fact, when I was reading Spider-Verse a few years ago, they still have Spider-Prime in there. Prime was a really cool character. It was almost like the Golden Age Shazam, where it was a little kid that could turn into this super powerful creature. And with Prime, he had like the sludge that went around him that turned him into this like Superman. And over the years, he had different iterations. Like there was like a sort of evil type Prime. And one of the last iterations after Marvel bought the company was Spider-Prime. And when Prime went to help Spider-Man, he went to turn into Prime. And somehow, like, Spider-Man had imprinted on him. And he became this, like, Spider-Boy thing with six arms. It was super quirky, but tons of fun. I really enjoyed Prime quite a bit. And I've tried to go back and read some of that stuff, and it didn't hold up as well. But I still thoroughly enjoyed it very much. So that is the Ultraverse. That's going to be the next one up on my list. From there, I want to go to another one that's kind of steeped in controversy. And that's, we'll call it Red Circle/Dark Circle/Impact Comics. And originally this was Red Circle. It's not an imprint of Archie Comics. But back in the day, Archie Comics was a much larger company that was doing different things. They had the Archer stuff. They had a radio division. They had the Red Circle stuff. And the Red Circle characters were really interesting. They came out, I think, in the 70s is when they started coming out, 70s into the 80s. There was Black Hood. There was Firefly, the Hangman, the Fox, the Shield, a couple other ones, the Web. And some of those were really popular. And eventually, interest on them waned, so they went away. And DC actually ended up creating their own imprint, Impact Comics, which had a logo very similar to Image. It was an exclamation point inside a word balloon. And they were putting out the Impact Comics line, which were rebranded Red Circle characters. And they tried that for a little while. They even tried to bring some of those characters into the DC universe. I don't know what the idea was behind doing that. I'm assuming just to generate fresh ideas, new characters, try to gain some more market share. But it did not work out very well. And all that went away. The deal was kind of put to the side, and Archie ended up bringing back these characters in 2015, 2016, 2014, somewhere around that time. And some of them were, I think, were really successful. Like, for example, The Black Hood was, I think, my favorite book of that year. It was absolutely incredible. They did two volumes of it. The first volume is by far the best, but volume two was also really good. They tried to do The Shield, which I think only came out with like three or four issues. They did The Fox, I think only had one or two. And, I mean, they had good creators on there, like Ron Mars and Michael Sosinski and all that stuff. So it's not like they didn't have the talent. The problem, I think, was more with Archie Comics, because Archie was not doing very well financially. And it seems like they just weren't able to put these books out on time. They weren't able to, like, keep hold of the talent. So the Dark Circle line ended up going away again. And, you know, I hope that some of those characters do come back at some point. Like I said, I really love the Black Hood. That take was just so dark and violent, but really incredible. And thoroughly, thoroughly enjoyed it. So Red Circle / Dark Circle / Impact Comics is going to be on the list. All together as one. All together as one. Let's go from there to the Sigilverse. And, of course, for those of you that remember the great era of comics known as the late 90s, you will, of course, remember CrossGen, because I think CrossGen was one of the most successful independent companies, I would say, of all time. Maybe not so much at this point, but at least up until that time, they definitely were. And they published a bunch of books. Some of my favorites were Sigil and Sojourn. I know, kind of hard to say, I guess. They also had Mystic, Scion, Meridian, The First. The Path was really interesting. That was like a samurai story. Route 666 was a horror book. I don't know, a bunch of different stuff. And, of course, they had crossovers. And, you know, just like Malibu with the Ultraverse, CrossGen did some really interesting stuff art-wise. And not just art-wise, but really interesting stuff business-wise as well. Because while, you know, in particular, the big two were doing kind of work-for-hire stuff, CrossGen did not do that. They actually had everybody that worked at CrossGen was a salaried employee. And everybody that worked there worked out of the main offices in Tampa, Florida. So there was none of this like, you know, one guy's out in California, one's in New York, let's email each other back and forth, let's call each other, let's like fax each other stuff. Remember, this is the 90s. Let's fax each other stuff. There was no internet, right? So interesting, right, that they would try to do this. I mean, they had some really great talent on there. Like Mark Waid was there, Ron Mars, Mark Alessi. Actually, Mark Alessi was the founder of the company too, but he wrote some of the books. And, you know, like they were flying these guys and paying for them to move out to Tampa. And for some of those guys, it didn't work out very well, I got to say, especially the ones that came in towards the end of the company in 04. But, yeah, really interesting. And, of course, they were salaried, right? So they could just crank out stories, the best stories they could, and not have to worry about, well, where's my next paycheck coming from? Because they're on salary. And I don't think anybody since has done that, right? I'm sure, like, you know, the publishers like Jim Lee and Dan DiDio at DC, I'm sure they're salaried employees, right? Because they're not really doing creative work much. But some of the other guys, and it could be hard, right? Because these guys don't have health insurance. They got to pay for their own health insurance, their own everything. CrossGen provided all that. So it was more like a typical corporation just making comic books. And that was really interesting business sense. And they did very well with it, by the way. CrossGen was out between 98. They started putting out books, I think, at the end of 99. But they founded in 98 and lasted all the way to 2004 when Disney actually ended up buying the company. So this is actually pretty recent. I mean, 04, that's 14 years ago. Disney ended up buying the company for $1 million because they were kind of running out of money. Times were tough in the mid-2000s. We know that, you know, DC was relaunching properties at the time. That's when New 52 started coming out. So it was a tough time. We talk about comic industry now and how tough it is for some of these guys. I mean, sales numbers now are higher than they were in the mid-2000s. So really tough time, but CrossGen, I think, was absolutely excellent. They had some really great titles. A lot of those books had really fantastic art as well. And it was something new and interesting. There was a lot of fantasy books, and I think that's something that not a lot of people were playing with. You know, everyone was trying to stick to the superhero stuff, but, you know, they did have a lot of fantasy stuff, and that appealed to a lot of people. I mean, who else was doing a samurai book? Like, nobody, right? So that was interesting. I really loved it. I recently read Sigil, actually. I reread it, I want to say earlier in this year. And, you know, it is still a little, I don't know, the narrative is a little aged, I guess you could say, but it still holds up pretty well in my head. And I still enjoyed it very much. So I recommend you go check out some of these cross-gen books. There really is something for everybody on here. In particular, if you like fantasy stuff, I think it is geared much more towards that. But yeah, really interesting. So Disney ended up buying the company in 2004 for $1 million. Can you believe that? What did DC pay for Marvel? Like $4.5 billion? They bought the company for $1 million. So I'm pretty sure it's just like assets. And they announced that they're going to be relaunching the line. So the next year, they actually did relaunch the line. They did Sojourn. Oh, God. I think there were only like two or three books. Sojourn and Sigil, I know for sure, came out. They only lasted a couple issues because apparently nobody bought them. I mean, they had planned like all this stuff. They're going to do books and like prose novels based on these characters. All that kind of ended up going away. So, you know, that's a little too bad. And it looks like we'll probably never see cross-gen books either, because they're just like with Malibu, kind of has that weird licensing deal with some of the original creators. It seems to be that the same thing is true for cross-gen. And as a result, I don't know if Disney wants to pay these creators anything, and they'll probably never reuse any of these characters. So that is too bad. I hope that's not the case. And, you know, being Disney, I mean, some of these books are perfect for Disney-type stories. Like Sigil, oh my God, that would make an amazing movie. Same with Sojourn. Or like Ruse. Ruse was really interesting. That was, who did that? Mark Waid, I think. And that was like a Sherlock Holmes story in Victorian England. And it was fantastic. Fantastic. So the Sigilverse has to be on this list. That is CrossGen Comics. And I have to get to my last one. And I know some of you that know me very well, they're listening, are very carefully listening to see what I'm putting on here. And some of you are automatically assuming that Amalgam Comics is going to be the final entry into this first top five. However, you're incorrect. Now, I will say, Amalgam Comics was amazing. I loved it. All right, the books were not great, but I loved it. And I've talked about Amalgam Comics many a time. Amalgam is, of course, the short-lived but really interesting dissection of Marvel and DC Comics. They had combined their characters into one, right? So I talked about like Dark Claw, which was Batman and Wolverine. I talked about Bruce Wayne, Agent of S.H.I.E.L.D., which is Bruce Wayne and Nick Fury. I've talked about some of the other ones. In fact, recently, I think last week I was talking about some of those. And they were great. And the cool thing was that they quit publishing all their other books. Like, this was the line for both publishers when this was happening. But unfortunately, that's not the case. I'm not picking Amalgam, because I've talked about it a little bit before. And there is actually a similar thing that I love more dearly than Amalgam Comics. And that is Earth 295. And some of you are wondering, what the hell is 295? Go into the Google machine or the DuckDuckGo machine. What is Earth 295? I'm going to tell you. Don't worry, folks. It is the Age of Apocalypse. That's right. The Age of Apocalypse is the final entry into my top five dead universes I wish would return, because the Age of Apocalypse was absolutely brilliant. Now, I said this was kind of similar to Amalgam, and not the fact that they combined characters, although there was some combination. There were a couple of tidbits of like character histories that would be combined to create one of these new iterations of Age of Apocalypse characters. But the really interesting thing about Age of Apocalypse was that Marvel quit publishing all their X-Men books during this time. And I think Age of Apocalypse lasted probably like a year or year and a half. So it wasn't like a short-lived thing. It was a big, big change. And they had some amazing titles on there. Basically, if you've never read Age of Apocalypse, and I know Marvel did a couple years ago, they did like a 10th anniversary maybe, or 20th anniversary, whatever it was. Some of these characters have popped in and out of the Marvel Universe as well. For example, Blink, which came out of Age of Apocalypse, is the team lead on the Exiles book that Saladin Ahmed does over at Marvel. One of my favorite characters of all time, by the way. I love Blink. And Age of Apocalypse came out in 95 through 96, and this starred, at least in the beginning, Legion, who has a fantastic TV show on FX. And Legion decides he wants to kill Magneto, so he goes back in time to kill Magneto. In the process, ends up killing his dad, Charles Xavier, and that causes havoc on the timeline. Of course it does. So Because Xavier's dead, Magneto decides to take over Charles's mission and founds the X-Men. And during this time also, Apocalypse ends up attacking our world about a decade before he does in the current Marvel continuity, if that's still a thing. And it dawns the Age of Apocalypse. So it's very much a post-apocalyptic story, which, of course, I absolutely adore. And it does some really interesting stuff with characters. Like, for example, Wolverine only had one hand because it got cut off in one of these battles. And his costume was awesome, dude. It was like blue and red and black. It was fantastic. I know some of you love the blue and yellow. I'm more partial to the Age of Apocalypse look. And so, you know, there's different alliances and teams that form out of this. And some of them are really interesting. So it kicked off with X-Men Alpha. And the books were Gambit and the Externals, which had Gambit, Sunspot, Jubilee, Strong Guy, and Lila Cheney. And that was kind of set in space because they're trying to reverse the timeline, get the Bishop to go back in time and prevent the murder of Charles Xavier. So they need to find the Emkron crystal, and Gambit and the Externals go out into space. They kind of have this dealings with the Shi'ar Empire, and a really cool book that replaced X-Force. There was Generation Next, which replaced my at the time favorite X title, which was Generation X, and that was Colossus and Shadowcat, which of course just recently were supposed to get married. Spoiler alert, did not happen. Also had Chamber, who's a really cool character, and I don't like the way that they've done it recently, but Chamber was in here. Husk, Mondo, and Skin, also one of my favorite mutants, because I mean his superpower is he has a lot of skin. Like, it's so dumb, but so cool. And they have to go and try to rescue Lana from the Sugar Man in another dimension. Because, of course, Lana can teleport between dimensions, and that's kind of important for what they're trying to achieve in Reverted in Timeline. So that was a really interesting book. Astonishing X-Men replaced Uncanny X-Men, and that was led by Rogue. And it consisted of Sabretooth, Blink, Wildchild, Morph, and Sunfire. Sabretooth in this iteration was really interesting. It was almost like two characters in one. And, of course, Blink was on the team, so I love this book because Blink was amazing. And they go in and start fighting Holocaust, who was a really cool villain. Maybe a little dated by now, but Holocaust is great. Amazing X-Men replaced the regular X-Men. That was Quicksilver, Storm, Dazzler, Banshee, Iceman, and Exodus. And Weapon X, of course, replaced Wolverine with this cool, cool new Wolverine that I love. I think this might be my favorite iteration of Wolverine, aside from the Barry Windsor-Smith Weapon X book that came out. Factor X replaced X-Factor, and this was kind of a villain book, so Factor X served Apocalypse, and they had cool teams on there. It was Cyclops, Havoc, M-Plate, Cannonball, God, I wish I remembered Northstar, and there were some other ones I can't remember. And of course, most of these characters were kind of really twisted in the head also, because Beast was a member of Apocalypse's team. You remember Dark Beast? Dark Beast was a big thing after Age of Apocalypse. That was one of the characters that survived pretty much undisturbed into the current Marvel timeline after Age of Apocalypse died. He was in the Dark Avengers. The Dark Beast was also part of the X-Men storyline, and that kind of was a weird thing for a few years. The final book was X-Man, which replaced Cable, and of course X-Man has shown up in the current run of Cable by Zach and Lonnie, and that's Nate Gray, which is kind of like the alternate timeline Cable, much younger and extremely powerful mutant. So that was the line, and it was absolutely incredible. I really wish that Marvel would somehow bring these back. You know, I often talk about the Elseworlds books that I really love, and there's no way that they couldn't do this as an Elseworlds thing, right? I know that they've tried to do a couple of miniseries over the years to try to call back to that. I know some of these characters have appeared in other books as a result, but I would love to see like an Age of Apocalypse 30 years later. I think that would be amazing. So start working on that, Marvel. You have a few years before the 30 years later. You know what? Age of Apocalypse 25. Is that a thing? 2020 will be the 25th anniversary of the Age of Apocalypse. I would love to see even just a mini-series. Okay, you don't need to replace all the X-Books. Although, with the way things are going, it seems that they're going to be replaced anyway. You need to replace the X-Books. Just give me a mini-series. Or like a couple of mini-series. You know, make a self-contained event. I would love to see that. So Marvel, if anybody over there is listening, please bring back the Age of Apocalypse. I of course own these in singles. I also bought some of the trades that came out. Really, really cool. I don't know if there is a complete Age of Apocalypse, like a gigantic book. It seems like that would be too big, so maybe that's not possible. But I would love to see that. I would buy the hell out of that. If you've never read Age of Apocalypse and you love the mutant universe, you want something cool and interesting, where the bad guys tend to win more often than the good guys, then I highly recommend this. The way that it ended was not my favorite, but I think it reset things back pretty interestingly. And, you know, at the beginning I call this Earth 295. That's only been the case since the years after the event. When this happened, this actually took place in Earth 616, which is the mainline Marvel universe. And, you know, it was a direct result of Xavier being killed. That's, of course, been retconned out of the way, but I wish they would have kept it, because I think it would have been really awesome to just keep this as part of continuity in one way or another. And that's going to be it for this week's top five. I hope you enjoyed it. You know, there's a couple other ones that I wouldn't mind maybe seeing come back. Some that I really would hope never come back. One that I thought about a little bit was Marvel Knights. And, you know, some of you are probably thinking to yourself, like, that's not its own universe. You know what? You may be right, because Marvel Knights was kind of an imprint of Marvel where they were doing characters that nobody was buying. And this is really interesting. At the time, it would have been like Punisher, Daredevil, Inhumans, Black Panther. Nobody gave a crap about any of those books. And Marvel ended up hiring Joe Quesada and Jimmy Palmiotti from Event Comics. They were doing their own imprint slash company at Event Comics. They were doing Ash, which was like a firefighter superhero guy. That was really awesome. I loved it. And they hired those guys because they liked the way that they were doing stuff at Event Comics. They hired them to come in and do this Marvel Knights line to kind of bring back some interest in some of these characters that nobody cared about at the time. And of course now, you know, Punisher and Daredevil and Black Panther are huge. In fact, Black Panther was one of the top five highest selling books in May, so last month. So you know, it's come a long way. And of course Quesada is still over at Marvel. Is he still editor-in-chief or maybe like creative director or something? He's still over there. Jimmy, not so much. Jimmy's been at DC and now he's got his own company. So, but really interesting stuff over at Marvel Knights. If you've never picked any of those books up, very, very highly recommended. A lot of great stuff came out of Marvel Knights, and the stories were very much self-contained. And, you know, you didn't have to read anything else going on in Marvel, even anything from the other Marvel Knights books. And I think it was very successful as a result. Some other ones that, you know, I used to want to come back, but I don't really care anymore. It's like Defiant Comics, right? That was Jim Shooter's company after he left Valiant. He had like Warriors of Plasm and a few other ones in there. Those were interesting. Jim's an interesting guy because he's done a lot of these new universe type things. In fact, I think he was one of the guys that pitched the new universe over at Marvel. There was also the MC2. Which I wonder if at some point MC2 wouldn't come back. MC2 happened after Heroes Reborn. That was when Jim Lee and Rob Liefeld took over Iron Man, Captain America, The Avengers, those books. And ended up not going very well. But Marvel liked kind of that idea, so they tried doing the MC2. So they had Spider-Girl, which is Peter Parker's daughter. They had J2, which is Juggernaut's son. Like, they try to do new iterations of established characters, but for a younger demographic with young characters. And of course, we've seen a lot of that at Marvel over the last couple of years. And I don't know how successful it has been for them, but you know, it's not a new idea. They were doing this with MC2. One of the ones that I really liked was Comics Greatest World, which was over at Dark Horse. And that was books like Barbed Wire, X, Ghost, those kind of things. And that was a really interesting line of books that really were a shared universe. They were based in like four different cities in the United States, or kind of the United States. And Ghost, I think, was really fantastic. I think Gail Simone did Ghost for a little while, and that was really good. X was kind of more geared towards, I would say, young boys, because it was extremely violent, and that was a thing at the time where you wanted crazy, violent anti-heroes. So really interesting stuff there. And one that I hope never comes back is Techno Comics. That was, oh God. Those of you that read Wizard Comics back, or Wizard Magazine back in the day, may remember Techno Comics. They had books like, they had Gene Roddenberry's Lost Universe, which was okay. Cool premise, but the problem with the Techno Universe was they had a lot of really cool, interesting dudes creating story ideas, but none of these people were actually writing the comics. And so as a result, it was kind of like a third-hand story, and it didn't quite translate well. But there was Gene Roddenberry's Lost Universe, Isaac Asimov's iBots, Leonard Nimoy's Primordials. I remember picking that up. It was like Star Trek with these like, it was set in the far future. And it was like Star Trek, animals from Earth had evolved to the point where they were humanoid, right? So they were like squid people and like lizard people. And I think the point was they were traveling back to Earth to see what had happened to their home planet. And I don't remember the whole story. It only ran like, I don't know, a couple of issues. Neil Gaiman had a couple on there. The one that I kind of dug was Mr. Hero, the Pneumatic Man. It was kind of like a Victorian automaton. It was kind of weird. It was really weird, actually. Really weird. Neil Gaiman had a few books that he had pitched to them. I'm not sure how many of them actually came out. If they came out, it was probably only like one or two. They didn't last very long anyway. I think they were around for maybe a year, if that. And but they had a lot of marketing behind them, a lot of marketing. They were all over Wizard magazine back in the day, and that's actually one of the reasons I bought some of these books. But I'm not gonna miss them. If you ever see them at a con or a comic shop for like a quarter, check them out, pick them up, and read them. But yeah, you're not really missing much. I hope you enjoy the first installment of Top 5. I will be back on Monday with the Top of the Pile. I read so many books this week. My head is spinning. Some really good ones. So Top of the Pile will be on Monday. And then, of course, we'll continue our journey into the comic book world. Thanks for listening. Have a good weekend.